You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
World stocks remain on course for their best month ever today as recent vaccine progress, Joe Biden's US presidential election win and hopes for further stimulus and a commodity surge in a weak dollar have really lifted the animal spirits. Warwick Lucas, Chief Investment Officer at Galileo Asset Managers, and Raymond Parsons of the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University, as always, with your end to the week. Warwick, the US out for Thanksgiving. How are you seeing activity levels in markets?
Well, I think we've had a heck of a run already, as you pointed out. And frankly, now without the input from the U.S. markets, I think generally quieter than normal. I mean, the world's a global village on that score anyway.
It certainly is a global village. And speaking of the global village, what we are seeing is that that second wave that is happening in Europe and the U.S., there are fears now that we're seeing that second wave spread into South Africa, the Eastern Cape and Western Cape showing some alarming spikes and rises in new cases.
Yeah, I guess that's a worry. I mean, in terms of cases in Europe, we've actually looked in some countries like there's already been a peak there and starting to drop off a bit, albeit it's early days there and obviously there's lockdowns and so on to go on. But the key question, of course, is, well, you know, what do we do about the Eastern Cape? And I think this is an area that I want to weigh in on because, you know, on the one hand, we can't do nothing. And on the other, frankly, we're out of economic bullets. So where's your happy trade-off? And I think the thing is to really go back and look at how does COVID actually spread? Because that actually gives you a clue as to how to deal with this. And also, who's been successful in dealing with this? And of course, that's the answer to that is when you look across Southeast Asia. So really what Southeast Asia did was twofold. First of all, lots and lots of testing. And the second thing is, and they learned this from the SARS epidemic, was really just crunch down on super spreader events immediately. And that's really the key there. So if we extrapolate that to the Eastern Cape, what do we deal with there? And that would be your super spreader events are basically nightclubs, sports events, parties, religious houses, public transport and schools. And basically what you need to do is just focus on those. Do not destroy the rest of the economy. Please do not destroy the rest of the economy. Cut down on those core super spreader events where you can. Go online where you can. And try and defer it. And that's all you do. Why? Because COVID spreads in bursts. It's not a nice, smooth, exponential function where one person infects three and those three go and infect nine, etc. It's basically out of 10 people, one will infect 20 to 30.
Absolutely.
And the rest will really do nothing else. And that's the key point. It's a burst event. It's super spreader is what the problem is.
Yes, good evening, Michael. Look, I'd like to just say in that regard, obviously we are not yet out of the woods as far as that's concerned. I just make two additional points. The first is we've got to get the balance between regulation and self-regulation much more effectively balanced. And secondly, above all, enforce the existing protocols where necessary. As Warwick's pointed out, we're going to have to enforce them, and particularly in certain areas, certain hotspots. So I think it's a question of doing of a very surgical approach, because we can't harm the broad economy again.
Yeah, we can't take the sledgehammer approach again, because what we have seen this week, Raymond, from a macro high-frequency data point of view, we've seen the BER's Consumer Confidence Index come out much better than expected. Inflation at 3.3% is well contained. And we are seeing through the trading statements from some of the banks that their provisioning has been overly conservative, which is to be expected, but things are starting to turn. The last thing you need now is to nip or cut any green shoots in the bud.
Well, I think we have to understand that, and I think I've been heartened by some of the high frequency data that we've had in the last few weeks, and also the one which we had on the consumer confidence. It's good news, and we should be pleased about it. But I've noticed that some of the experts, even those who've helped to do the survey, are saying in some ways it looks too good to be true. We've got to be careful. We mustn't read too much into it. They do remind us it's off a low base. We've got to remember that. It's also rather lopsided. It's the consumer-orientated side that is strong, whereas the construction and indeed the manufacturing side is weak. And as we've just said at our intro, there are other risks now out there on the COVID front that could affect these numbers towards the end of the year. But underlying it is, as the Minister of Finance said earlier this week, yes, we can unpack these numbers, but at the root lies the capital formation of the country as the basis for growth. And I just want to remind us that the IMF thinks that our percentage of investment to GDP this year will be as low as 13%. It needs to be 25 or 30% in terms of what we've already committed ourselves to. So let's just bear that in mind as to why we've got to get the fundamentals right.
And the fundamentals mean upping that level, that gross fixed capital formation, and that is going to come from the private sector because government just doesn't have the capacity to anymore because we've run out of runway on that.
Well, absolutely, because once again, it is, of course, we want the public investment also to take off on the field of infrastructure. But at the end of the day, who are the main drivers? It's the private sector. And unfortunately, this week, there have been some unfortunate developments which give rise to the question, who is in charge of the rattling train? And firstly, it's this confusion around the tweets that have been sent out by the Minister of Finance about SAA. Where is the collective cabinet responsibility? There is not sticking to the hard line about ANC corruption in the sense that those who are formally charged ought to step aside. That is already been diluted. And then finally, this other lack of coordination between the SARB, the Treasury, and the Financial Authority on exchange control and investment. You know, I know many countries can have this experience, but you know, the margin for error in this country is really very small now. And we've got to try and get more things right the first time round. And I really think that coming back to this issue about capital formation, that's where the damage will be done if we don't get the certainty, the credibility, and the confidence that you need to underpin that capital formation that you need for growth and indeed job creation.
Now, sadly, what happened in that fiasco around inward listed ETFs and Regulation 28 makes me believe that we're regulated by Kermit the Frog, Warwick. It is more than unfortunate. It's really terrible coordination. At that level, you should be coming to market with a very clear message, and you should have thought about all of the octopus tentacles that doing something like that could have. You should think about the ramifications. What is your view?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, it, like most paths to hell, it was paved with good intentions, namely to increase inward investment. And of course, the problem was that a lot of ETFs fell under the same definition. That would then cause or potentially lead to a skewing in the amount of pension fund assets that could go offshore to the point where, you know, if it came into a market, you could cause all kinds of disruptions in terms of potential volumes and so on. And so basically it had to go back to the drawing board for redefinition. So I don't agree that there was some big conspiracy here, et cetera, et cetera. It was just pure and simple messiness.
Yeah, it was messy, and one can see from the outset that it's not advisable to allow pension funds to be able to externalize all of their capital. We need capital locally.
Not in one shot, anyway.
Not in one shot. We can't. I mean, it's like allowing the government employees pension fund that's been wanting to invest more offshore to go offshore in one shot. And the market dislocations that can cause is just too much for our market to bear right now. And all of this, though, this is the point, should have been thought out beforehand, Raymond, because it further dents and undermines confidence.
Well, that's right. And I think coming back to the point, I mean, we had a good run with that investment conference. There were certain pledges made, and they were made not only by the private sector, but made by the government. And I mean, the Minister of Finance, the President, they've gone on record on tweet as saying, yes, we accept its policy certainty that we need to provide. And that's not a weekly thing. You build it over time, and these events detract from your credibility. It creates a credibility gap, and I think that is why you found that the credit rating agencies, two of them, decided, we're not accepting this anymore. We feel that we've been let down. Mm. We're no longer giving you the benefit of the doubt. So we've got to understand we can turn this round, but we've got to show more demonstrable evidence that we're going to try and get more things right the first time round, because these mistakes are proving to be very, very costly for a country, as I said earlier, in which the room for error has shrunk quite a lot.
Absolutely. We've shown a problem of not thinking through. I mean, talking heads like ourselves have been warning for years about too much government employee numbers. They had to be dealt with, must be dealt with. Repeat, 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 bang our heads on the table. And eventually, hey, presto, now the country's against the wall. Unfortunately, now we're faced with tough choices. And if we don't deal with our current situation firmly, we've got a fiscal cliff facing us in 3 to 4 years.
You see, I think the big problem here is, once again, the lesson for everyone, but for South Africa, is that if you don't act in time, you end up having to take much more costly, much more painful, much more radical decisions with all sorts of political consequences, let alone the economic pain. But now we've reached a point. There'll be no gain without pain.
The age of governing without choices has indeed come to an end, to borrow from R.W. Johnson. Raymond Parsons of the School of Business and Governance at Northwest University, and Warwick Lucas, Chief Investment Officer at Galileo Asset Managers, with your week that was.